The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today my guests on Off the Shelf are Bill Gormley. Bill is the president of the Gormley Group, and Tom Sisti. Tom is senior director and chief legislative counsel for SAP. Both of them are amongst the leadership of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Guys, welcome to the show.
Hey, Roger. How you doing? How was your Thanksgiving there?
It was fine, Bill. It was very good, and I hope everybody out there had a great Thanksgiving as well. And Tom, how was your Thanksgiving?
I still think I'm suffering the effects of the tryptophan.
Gobble, gobble. Too much gobble, gobble.
So it's been a challenging return to work, that's for sure.
Hey, we're here and we're safe and hope the listeners are good. Hey, you have a good show.
I hope we have a good show.
What are we going to talk about?
I think we're going to talk about we're going to start by talking, I think it's a holistic conversation where we're going to talk about the past, but also about the future and how can we sum that up? The Coalition just had its 2016 Fall Training Conference, the title of which was The 45th President's Acquisition Agenda and What It Means for Your Business. It was a very good day. Both you guys were there, so I want to get some of your impressions and at least initially how you thought it went and what some notes of interest.
Well, from my perspective, I think the members who obviously attended that were able to get a early read, I guess, from an administrative stand, new administration coming in January, Roger, that some things may be unsettling, but on one hand, I think it's clear that in some regards, it's always going to be the incoming is going to take the outgoing's agenda, or excuse me, budget
right
with them. So I think from a pure business standpoint, I think it was the kind of a common theme throughout the day was while a lot of change is being discussed by the president-elect here, that this from a policy standpoint, it's still going to take time to get some of these policies addressed. And I think we can obviously hopefully get into some of that today.
Sure, absolutely. And Tom, even some policies have been put on hold, right, Tom? Like a few injunctions in the courts and whatnot with regard to some of the regulatory
developments. Well, yeah, we had the case in Texas where there was an injunction against the Fair Pay Safe Workplaces executive order and the implementation of that order in both the guidance and the regulation that was issued. I think to Bill's point, people are trying desperately to get some sense of certainty around what's going to happen. It's a little difficult to get that. There are realities. There are just practical realities that people don't seem to be thinking about for some reason in this transition, maybe because of the surprise in the election
result,
and things like that. You have just the practical reality of naming people, having people exit, having people come on board. And there's this other dynamic of not understanding how regulatory activities that are underway are going to fare in a new administration.
Right. And then, oftentimes, right, there's a lot of acting folks, career folks who go, at least in the acquisition world, to go into positions that eventually, politicals will fill. And in a certain sense, they're typically marking time, right? And, and sort of holding the fort until the new team comes in.
Yeah, I think from a pure business lens, Roger, I think stay close to your customers as close as you can. Not that you normally get far from them, but this is, something that should, resonate throughout the business community, which is a commercial practice, but more so in government now during the transition, as well as any company goes through a transition. You want to stay in close contact so you understand the extent you can read the tea leaves, so to speak, or see proposed policy changes that may affect any of the markets that you're in. And now's the time to really pay attention in all areas and all aspects of government right now.
Right. And with regard to the regulatory, state of play right now, do you guys anticipate, the current administration continuing to push forward on some of its regulatory initiatives in the procurement space, or do you think they'll take a pause and say, okay, it's that we've got 6 weeks left? Do you see that, what do you think the reaction to that will be on the Hill?
Well, two observations. One, I think it's interesting that although it came out, I think, in a tweet or maybe in a brief message.
Well, that's the way the world works now, right? Huh?
I know. For those of us who need reading glasses to read their tweets,
right?
The proposal that for every regulation issued, two should be withdrawn. Of course, the devil's in the details, which two will be withdrawn, That's intriguing. Given some of the themes that arose during the conference were the burden on the procurement system. I think the confusion in the process is moving full steam ahead on certain things that have been challenging for the procurement community and have not been met with acclaim, if you will, of the regulatory activities that are still being implemented and how those will fare going into the next year. It's uncertain.
Right. Bill, well, you worked at GSA and went through, several transitions, didn't you?
Yeah, I think basically.
You got plenty of gray hair there. I think.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it'll slow down a little bit here.
Okay. Yeah. Well.
At least he has hair.
Well, that's a good point, Tom. Tom was speaking of himself, of course. In observing what happened, in the case of GSA, for example, it's not at the top of the list, right, in terms of folks coming in?
Yeah, in regards to GSA, or not GSA, and just specifically GSA, but when you get into the area we're talking about here, acquisition, you've heard me say it before, Roger, acquisition is not a cocktail party conversation, period. And so therefore,
in most circles,
GSA, it should be. Maybe GSA should have a cocktail party, but I think they already had one. So I don't want to get into all that. Right? So we don't want to get into
that.
So
that's 4 years old now.
But the point here is contracting is not, an area that gets a lot of conversation, outside its own family base. And I think therefore, I think we've seen a slowdown in innovation and focus and you asked a question earlier here that, how do we see the rest of the administration's time spent in regards to the area of acquisition? And we haven't seen them slow down. We haven't seen them halt or pull back yet. There's a lot of things on the table, a lot of automated areas. There's a lot of data questions of gathering data and how to, I think where we collectively come down here is that the government and, Tom's going to bring a lot of different perspective, which is good here. So I'm more operational. You, Roger, are a lawyer. You always got your lawyer hat on. You're kind of, you take it off once in a while. Tom brings the lawyer and the hillside as well. So he's seen, the gears of government. Each one of us have been a different size gear, so to speak. And some are bigger, some are smaller in that regard. So the key here, is that has the government made progress in reducing the cost of doing business? And that people will talk about, this from different perspectives. And I think, and we can get, obviously have some time to hopefully get into that today. But I think, your group that if I, in the conference, if I knew then what I know now, when you go through the list and hopefully have some fun with Tom here.
Let's set the stage. We got about a minute left in this segment. And when we come back, we can talk in detail about that particular panel. We had a panel at the conference, Acquisition Policy, If I Knew Then What I Know Now. Tom Sisti was a moderator of that panel, and we had Steve Kelman, former OFPP administrator back then. Now he's a Weatherhead professor of public management at Harvard. Dee Lee. Dee is now the chairperson of the Section 809 panel. Very, very important. We'll talk a little bit about that as well. In her government days, she was the Director of Defense Procurement Acquisition Policy and also OFPP Administrator. Angela Stiles, she's the Chair of Crowell and Mooring, LLP, and then she was the Administrator of OFPP. Jim Williams, he was the Acting GSA Administrator and FAS Commissioner, and he's now a partner at Schaumbach and Williams Consulting. And if we had also Dan Tangerlini, he's the president of Seamless Docs Federal now. Back then, he was the GSA administrator. So we had some great folks in that lineup, had a great discussion, and Tom was ringleader of that. When we come back, we'll get Tom's take on that and also a little bit about Bills. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Bill Gormley. He's the president of Gormley Group, and Tom Sisti. Tom is the senior director and chief legislative counsel for SAP. And Tom, you're actually the moderator of the acquisition policy panel, If I Knew Then What I Know Now, at the fall training conference. And we had it was a all-star lineup. And I'm just going to, what's your take on it? What were the big takeaways?
Well, I'll tell you, first, I was surprised and a little depressed because a lot of those people were engaged in the reform movements of the 90s. And a lot of the problems that were raised during the panel were really similar problems to those we thought we had confronted and addressed in the 1990s, especially in the area of commercial items and leveraging commercial items, utilizing them so that you can leverage the research and innovation expenditures of the private sector in the development of those items, freeing up funds for the government to spend on government-unique products or activities. The burdens that have been layered around the acquisition of those items from a regulatory standpoint, to hear that there are still challenges there, was a little disconcerting.
Wasn't there a sense that we're back where we started again? It's almost the focus on government unique requirements is in government unique processes, just across the board, where I don't want to second guess you as a moderator, Tom, but it seemed like everybody was like, we're back where we started again.
Well, I was trying to paint a nicer
picture.
You were
being diplomatic, I know.
There is a provision from way back in FASA that says, the commercial item acquisitions are exempted from a whole cluster of laws, except a few. But a regulatory action can be undertaken to include commercial items within the ambit of other regulations, if necessary. Well, that has been applied over the last.
Right, well, isn't it like it has to be in the best interest of the government or something?
Well,
like that?
And that, but that's right. Determined.
And it's
on
always
the regulatory
in the best interest,
base.
Right. I mean, it's kind of your point is that it's always right. it's become a rubber stamp that anything that could theoretically apply to any to a government unique Part 15, let's say procurement, also is going to be applied to a Part 12 commercial item procurement the way things have gone over the last 10 years.
Well, this sort of leads to an interesting takeaway from that panel, and that is there was unanimity across multiple administrations, across agencies. You had three OFPP administrators, two former GSA administrators, and to a person, they all agreed that we have reached a point where it's necessary for us to engage in wholesale review of the acquisition system. That's an important conclusion because more and more we're seeing that the time is ripe for that, as we saw, I think, back in the late 80s, early 90s. But there's a difference. If you go back then, the U.S. still had its technological edge. It has it now, of course. But it was solidly grounded, if you will. I think we've seen in some of the more recent legislative activities on the Hill a concern that which has kept us secure, our technological edge, is now becoming available to adversaries and potential adversaries around the world. So to the extent that we have a system that interferes with our ability to at least maintain, if not increase, our technological edge, we are putting ourselves at risk. So that's a difference between now and then. And the fact that we have people resonating from, as I said, across spectrums, across administrations, and across the two agencies represented is telling. I think it is probably good for us all to reflect on whether or not we should undertake this. And to that end, I think having Dee on the panel, the head of the Section 809 panel, which is doing a regulatory review and more for DOT.
Just explain real quick the Section 809 panel, Tom.
Section 809 of the Defense Authorization Act charged DOD with creating a panel with language very similar to the Section 800 panel, but to look at the regulatory process inside of DOD to recommend an amendment, repeal, et cetera. That panel has taken a broad charge to look at the system, to look at all aspects of how DOD is acquiring. And, you know, I think it's an interesting parallel. If you go back, the Section 800 panel came into play. We had the Section 800 panel report. Then we had the National Performance Review. So now we have the Section 809 panel. And you have this kind of bubbling up from the grassroots desire for a wholesale review of the system. Maybe we're ripe for reform.
Well, yeah. Well, 809 panel essentially, you know, in a certain sense, you could argue that given the charge that they've sort of given themselves to review everything, are acting consistent with what the consensus of your panel, right?
Yes.
Bill, any thoughts on the panel?
Oh, a lot.
Okay.
A lot.
Well, so, share, please.
So here you have five former SESers, yep. Right? Senior executives.
Yep.
And you have one that came from academia.
Right. And folks who have been leaders in the private sector and academia.
And now. Yeah, but you have all the rest of them were career government. And you had D who was operations, was a contracting officer and did policy later on. You had Angela, OFPP policy, Jim Williams operations. He was a CEO, a contracting officer, I believe, at one time. He got into the policy side. And you had Tangerlini, I think it's always been policy, hasn't really been a contracting person, has overseen parts of contracting. But listening to you and Tom here, I get a migraine. You can see why this is not a cocktail conversation.
Wait a second.
You guys love this stuff.
You got a migraine headache?
I mean, I'm just talking, just as far as, you know, who's run a company, who's been on the other side, and what's happened is since they've left, they've been on the other side a long time, but they've been in there long enough to really meet your qualification. If I knew them, what I know now, and they're all intelligent people, but it's a different lens when you step outside the world of the U.S. government. And want to sell back into the U.S. government and have to run a company, make payroll, and be able to accept the changes that the government, you know, can make. And you really have no really direct input on it as a company for the most part. And so here we are being, you know, listen to Tom, you know, how can we, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry. And I hope, I don't want people at stoplight or they're getting ready to use their easy pass. But anyway, part of the deal is how's it gotten slower during a time of when automation and, you know, electronic everything has just increased exponentially and the government is falling behind? Think about it. What is it really regulatory or is it leadership?
I think it's both. I think leadership impacts the regulatory framework you operate in, and when people focus more on process rather than outcomes, it results in layering on of additional regulatory burdens. It slows down the process. People aren't – their leadership isn't focusing on how to make it easier to do business. The focus has been on we got to have a process in place to make sure we have oversight.
You know, that's an important point because we become a compliance-rich environment. Where it's better
don't
to
mess,
check.
That's industry
don't mess
poor.
With the lawyers.
Compliance-rich, industry poor.
That's
I'm just
right.
trying.
Oh, we agree. You're preaching to the choir.
Where's the fulcrum point here of just where, you know, how far has this gotten out to the point of having a perfect environment? And that's more of an academia side, to be candid, than to the operational side, where you're having to make changes. You know, someone doesn't come to work that day or someone gets another job. I mean, all these other things that you are challenged during the course of the day.
And, you know, we have to take our break.
Really?
So we got
come
some,
on. You think,
we got some
serious?
Time to get Bill some,
we're just
some,
getting, come on.
Some Tylenol or
all
something.
Right. I need something.
And when we come back, we'll talk some more. We'll continue this conversation about process versus outcomes and how the government is being left behind while the commercial marketplace and the internet and the World Wide Web are fundamentally changing the way people do business. My guests today are Bill Gormley, President of Gormley Group, and Tom Sisti. He is the Senior Director and Chief Legislative Counsel for SAP. And you're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Tom Sisti. He's the Senior Director and Chief Legislative Counsel for SAP. Bill Gormley, he's the President of Gormley Group. We're talking the 45th President's Acquisition Agenda, what it means for your business, the theme of the Coalition's 2016 Fall Training Conference, and just some of the dialogue information that was shared at that conference, and also just talking policy and operations, Bill, of course.
So do you think people would stop as a stoplight change? Can we move forward?
I don't know. Can you tell me, Bill?
I mean, I don't know. I'm just trying to. You know,
we're talking process versus outcomes, and you know, I guess the process would say you got to wait for the green light.
I think we've been on caution for a long time.
Okay.
I think we're tapping. We don't know where we're going forward. We don't know when the world's passing us by. Tom brings up, you know, we're good, still good on technology, but technology's catching up. So there's a lot when you really bring all this together in regards to acquisition, Roger and Tom. It's just, you know, who's the advocate for, you know, removing, you know, impediments to do business with the government? And, you know, there's always a socioeconomic preference, and we understand that. But even that has got to the point where a few are able to really move forward based on the expense of doing business with the government.
But even then, the few that can move forward are at some point stopped because they have to leave that system.
It's like,
you know,
uh-oh.
Wait a minute. What do I do now? You know, like there's no jump off point. Okay. And so you have that, but going to this point of process, yep. I mean, I think Steve Schooner raised some interesting points regarding process and data accumulation for the sake of accumulating data. I think we've gotten ourselves wrapped around the axle a bit here because we have, in the name of instituting process, we've kind of lost sight of what the goal of the procurement system is. And until we have consensus around that, we're going to have a problem. Is the procurement system a system to buy things? Is it to buy goods and services? Or is it a system that will serve as a vehicle on which you overlay various other social policies, even to the extent that they're duplicative? Okay.
Right.
And
yep.
If we don't answer that question, we can't even come to an agreement that the system is first and foremost to assist agencies in fulfilling their missions, then we have a disconnect that puts everything at risk. When you're collecting data that really doesn't have a parallel, the act of collecting itself has a parallel in the private sector. And then you say, but I want to bring in these innovators from the private
small
sector.
Small businesses and whatnot.
How are they supposed to assimilate that? How do they take that and go, okay, I'm going to turn this into a business plan. I'm being asked to do things, even though they use the same words. They're not exactly the way we do them in the private sector.
Well, Bill, you know, GSA would say they reduce the burden with transactional data versus the price reduction clause in CSP.
Right. You mentioned earlier that was a GSA.
Yes.
So using operational experience, some of the things that are trying to be addressed today, because big data is kind of the catch-all right now. If you have the data, you can evaluate everything and anything. And so the government's reaching out to industry to give government data that the government created the data. So my point is we had this
The government's really paying for it twice.
Exactly. But they're trying not to because they want a lower price.
I mean, so this is like, crazy.
Can I confess now? I've been gone for a long time that I didn't do a good job in government.
I'm surprised to hear that, Bill.
So I could never figure out what our total cost of acquisition was. Now we had one of the top firm that would do research. And I'm trying to get the right term right now. Polling,
yes.
Which is kind of interesting right now after the election. The top polling firm came, you know, was hired by GSA to go find the end customer. And I asked them when they met with us, the initial meeting, I'll say real quick, do me a favor and just make sure that your representative of this company stay on this project because I want to see when you come back, I want to see that you've in fact identified our customers. And they were looking at us as like we were typical government people. They were looking like they're the smartest people in the room. And the person's just, you could just see them shake their head at us. And I'm like inside, okay, we're going to see where this, and hopefully I was wrong. Right. Yeah, that's where I went.
Sure.
So they come back 6 months later or something like that, right? After they've done all these interviews, to their credit, it was the same person leading it.
Uh-huh.
I was so looking forward to this meeting. That person wasn't. Because they looked at me, I looked at them. I'm like, I look forward now for you to tell us who our, he says, and he went through a long, you know. I'm like, did you find a customer? No. And it sounds so obvious who a customer can be, but there's so many systems between the time a procurement gets let, who handles the ordering, you know, who does the buying, and where is the end user?
Who actually uses it.
The end user is the key. Now, yeah, you or Tom mentioned earlier, you know, you mentioned Schooner. Schooner's point is a customer survey. He said that is fundamentally, are they getting what they needed when they needed it?
Right.
Okay, and this pricing thing is we're chasing this thing down a hole that there is no end to it. Nobody gets the best price, but it's the flavor you can always, you feel right. safe talking about. But the total cost, sorry.
Go ahead.
Can I, we still on? We got yes. another hour?
Yeah.
All right. So the total cost of acquisition is the key. The government's cost has to be considered in what they're doing here, Roger.
And to get that total cost of acquisition, you have to understand not only the direct cost, but the indirect cost of acquisition. And again, that's another takeaway from that panel. We have a lot of people who are doing apples and oranges comparisons. Like, for instance, they're saying, with respect to the category management pilot, if you look in there, the measurement of success is a measurement against prices, essentially. It's did we have a reduction? Now, there are other measurements that are really processed, so they're not.
None of them go to like, value.
Did everybody use the system? That's a measure of success. Well, you know, that in and of itself is a clue that we have an issue, because when your focus is, did I conform to a process to determine whether the process itself is a success? That's a problem, because that's not a value-based goal. So we're looking at price before, price after. But we're not looking at what it cost to get the price after. And if the direct and indirect costs in total amount to a 3 or 4-fold increase in cost, and you're only receiving a fractional reduction in price, then what have you achieved in this whole process?
Right. Well, that goes back, and I get back again to value and how do you customer say, did the end user, did the outcome meet the mission requirements of the agency in an effective way? Now, you know, it's interesting you guys mentioned this, because when you're talking about all this stuff, I think about, and price, you brought up price. Well, you brought up the category management initiative. Well, you know, they've got the category management draft memo. They're identifying OMB is identifying best-in-class contracts. And if you look at the criteria for those, it's fundamentally, they're talking about price. Price and data reporting are the two keys to being a best-in-class contract. Nothing about value, nothing about, I mean, it's, so
there's
in a certain sense,
so many
if they issue that memo, you're talking about like basically institutionalizing some sort of low price, technically acceptable approach to government across the board.
And that could increase the cost of government.
That more than likely will.
Yeah, that's my point.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and then you put the oversight. I don't know if oversight from, like, we could have a lot of fun here. Right.
Well, you know what?
We don't
want to talk about oversight in the next segment.
There you go.
Okay.
I love it.
All right. So
I'm coming back.
Yeah, we're coming back for one more segment with Bill Gormley. He's the president of the Gormley Group, and Tom Sisti. He's senior director and chief legislative counsel for SAP. And you're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Tom Sisti, he is the Senior Director and Chief Legislative Counsel for SAP, and Bill Gormley, the President of the Gormley Group, also amongst the leaders of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Guys, so Bill, you started to raise the question of oversight, so...
I haven't gotten over that either.
Okay, well, please do...
It's just like the airing of grievances.
That's where we are.
I think we'll have, you know, hopefully the listeners will... I don't know if we're going to... They're going to agree with us or not, but that's part of, you know, this show, right? So we can
absolutely
have discussions. So anyway, on the oversight, Tom and I were talking just, you know, while you were off the air here or at the stoplight, however you want to categorize this. the...
I got the caution light on now with this conversation. Light, go ahead.
We erased it. Anyway, on the oversight is really one component of acquisition. I mean, it's an important component. Both industry and government understand conceptually the need and necessity for oversight. Essentially, we're talking the IG office, okay? I think but part of this is accountability, where the IG adds value. There's an accountability side to this, Roger, that the IG has to take accountability. I think staying in their same position or posture without expecting everyone else to change around them is being really unfair, unrealistic, I should say. There's a cost to everything, and this is a cost in government contracting. And when we talk about total acquisition costs, I know what came out as part of the discussion at the conference from the IG panel, Roger, when people were talking about how long does it take to do an audit. And it was almost without a hesitation. There is no time limit. You know what that feels like if you're running something? I mean, everything's got a certain amount of time, and there's a cost to that. And from a business standpoint, and I think the IRS, you know, it gives you dates, and I guess you can get extensions, but the IRS at some point say, hey, enough's enough. You know, the government can only. So if the government says that on one hand, industry just can't sit and wait and just get contract extensions if that's what's necessary, or holding up an award. So there is a cost to the government by not having coverage. There is a negative cost to it.
And implicit in the last two segments has been really the issue of mission fulfillment. And going back to that question, if the procurement system is to facilitate mission fulfillment, then you have to ask, what are the costs of all components, direct and indirect? And you have to also accept that time has a cost. There is a value to that.
Yeah, we heard that.
We did in that panel. The other thing I think you heard in that panel was there's no silver bullet. Everybody's looking for this is the approach. This is going to be the saving process. And there really isn't. And I'm troubled by this because this issue has come up a lot in recent years. There was an analysis of how we got where we are. And I remember reading one obscure study about the emphasis on centralization, decentralization back in the 90s, and now we need to go back to centralization. Well, decentralization was not a goal. Decentralization was a means. The goal was empowerment and discretion at the lowest level closest to the point of action. That whole notion of subsidiarity, which fell out of favor with some in the campaign recently, but this idea that the people closest to the decision point are the ones who are going to understand it the most. They're going to have accountability. Their budgets are factored
right,
into that.
Most directly impacted by
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think that we've been so oriented towards finding a process or a silver bullet. And there just isn't one. It depends on the mission, on the timing.
Right.
You know,
that's category management. It's a process. It's a bureaucratic layering on of a whole different structure on top of currently existing structure to try to find some sort of consensus decision-making across the board as opposed to subsidiary.
Right. If you're looking for something that's midway between doing nothing and that more easily fulfills something akin to the Economy Act, you know, certainly communities of interest should buy together. I don't
he's
think anyone disagrees with that.
I tell you what, we need to turn the squirters on the windshield, hit the wipers.
The Economy
right
Act.
You got to kill me right now. But the bottom line is,
I have a question, though.
Go ahead. You have a question?
Okay, so you guys are both sort of the issue of time as a cost. Is time more expensive now than it used to be?
I would say, first off, time is a limit. There's a limit. Okay, so I'd say yes.
Okay.
Because I'll even tell you why.
Okay.
And then
you know where I'm going with this.
Well, because the government's trying to do more with less. And if you take more time, you're going to get less done, therefore increasing the total cost of acquisition. That's
part of it.
It used to be, if you got the money, honey, I got the time, but you don't have the money.
Right.
So.
Well, also these days, right? That was very good, Tom. And nowadays, time, the time to market, the time for the competition you know, is speeding ahead, right? Especially in technology, right? So the longer it takes, the further behind you get, the more it costs to try to catch up, the more you have to do, spend more when you're trying to spend less, right?
And do which more means work. It's not, now is not the time to layer on duplicative systems, to have multiple entities inside of government doing the same thing or similar things. So yes, everything has a kernel of truth to it. And it's again, none of the statements here to say category management is a failure, should never be used. No, the point is you use it appropriately.
Right.
And you do it based on data, yeah, on total cost of acquisition.
Right.
You have real-time market versus last-time market. And the data they're collecting is last-time market. Right. It's not real-time.
It's almost irrelevant at this point, right?
And I would argue that taxpayer dollars are being spent chasing pennies.
Yeah.
Through this whole, without the, and I'd love for someone to say, hey, Gormley, you're totally wrong, or to us, because here's what the total acquisition cost is.
The problem is that we're dealing with big numbers. So when people see a problem that has a big number attached to it, they don't look and say, this is a fraction of a percent. Right. They look and say, that's a big number. But you know, we're not dealing with a heavenly system here. We're dealing with an earthly system. And you know, any business enterprise is going to have some noise, some error rate in the process.
Well, it gets back to oversight and acceptance of risk. So for example, when you talk about how, you know, does category management work or not, you know, maybe it makes sense and for GSA to reorganize around it, because it is the fulcrum between the industry and the customer. And if they want to, because GSA has been organized that way in the past, right?
They had commodity,
right.
Now
it's the same
category.
Yeah.
It's the same concept.
And they went away from that to sort of a contract focus. Now they're going back to that. We look forward to working with them on that. But that probably makes sense for GSA from its, you know, service delivery perspective to better meet its customers. But that doesn't translate from an agency implementation to a government-wide implementation.
Right.
Roger, I think you are moving towards an expo.
Expo? What about the expo? You think, we're talking about, we're moving forward here.
Come
you think
on
there's going to be an expo, Bill?
I think GSA, the value proposition of the expo was the cost effectiveness of delivering hundreds, probably thousands
more
of training hours to the government community. It was just the thirst is just endless on this, because you have people come in and out and working on new things. And there is a significant void of acquisition training. And that was
online training doesn't really,
online training there's value to it. All right. But there is nothing like meeting someone or being in a classroom, talking with your peers, understanding that you get more during those 3 days of really the government sending someone somewhere. They're actually sitting and doing something, not only sitting, but talking, walking the floor, looking at the industries, having conversations. I mean, this is, you want to go into contracting commercially? This is what they do. This is not in there, because it's online is an element. There's no, I get it. But for new people to have no feeling of what you're listening to or how you. And so I think there's the human element cannot be, online does not supersede human. I'm sorry.
Tom, any final comments?
No, I think that Bill's right. You need this kind of engagement and interaction. And the more you set up barriers to that kind of engagement, the more you're moving back to the, mid-1960s, and just a process laden and process driven approach to acquisition. I think we have to start rationalizing the system against a new set of realities, among them the new technological realities that have arisen because of the rapid evolution of technology and the adversaries that we face.
Right. Well, on that point, you guys just are. Well, Dan Gordon had it right about the Mythbusters idea.
Right.
But I think we heard from the consensus from your panel, Tom, is that, he had it right and the guidance was good, but the change hadn't taken place to more open communication.
How ludicrous is it for the government to have to issue something from OFPP that you can talk to? And think about what's Mythbuster.
Right. Well,
how did we get to the point of
it
having
to become
a myth? I'm
sure Dan felt that way, but they had to do something.
I'm not saying he didn't, but that right there
tells you how bad it was.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. To take credit for, and that's considered a significant announcement about the Office of Federal Bureau of Policy that you can talk to industry.
But I will say, there's a lot of engagement and government presentations at the conference. And we applaud that. And I know the attendees, both government and industry, saw great value in exchange of information. So we appreciate
that. And I think actually GSA deserves a lot of credit. I know that you and I both attended meetings after the conference where they're really trying to get it right. They're trying to get they're trying to put some data behind things where they can. To be fair, these are people who are really trying to work within the parameters that have been laid out for them.
So I want to thank my guest today, Bill Gormley. He's the president of the Gormley Group, and Tom Sisti. Tom is the senior director and chief legislative counsel for SAP, and you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.